The Viridian Nutrition range of 200-plus award-winning products includes vitamins, minerals, herbs, nutritional oils, specialty supplements, tinctures, and balms, all formulated to be healthful, efficacious, and pure. By choosing our Viridian Nutrition range, you are one step closer to your goal of 100% wellness. Ethical vitamins with an organic heart. Available at all Browns outlets. Browns and you.
Welcome to The She Word, conversations that women rarely have but really should, and I'm your host, Trudy Kerr. Some conversations that we rarely have are just because we don't stop to think about how important they are. This episode focuses on one such topic, our mental well-being in the workplace. The average person spends a significant portion of their life at work, with estimations suggesting around 90,000 hours in a lifetime, which is roughly one third of a person's life. Here in Europe, around 10% of people experience mental health challenges like anxiety and depression, with 38% of employees identifying mental well-being as a major workplace concern. Specific risks include work overload and dealing with difficult clients, which are more prevalent among women. Over 3.5 million EU workers aged between 15 and 64 reported mental health issues in 2024, contributing significant economic costs through lost productivity and absenteeism. This is not just an issue for employees. This is an important driver for employers as well. As in this show, I sit down with two women who have first-hand experience on both sides of the employment fence, and one guest who brings expertise to the topic from a mental health perspective. This is a huge topic, and as I sat down to prepare for this show, I realized how complex the subject is. But today we're going to start looking at the issues. No doubt we're going to need more than one show. So I am absolutely thrilled to be joined by these beautiful women. And I'm going to start with you, Sarah. Sarah Zamikataya, the CEO of Pikataya & Co. Limited. Sarah is also a mother of three teenagers, a son and two daughters, a keen animal lover with a dog and three cats at home as well. Sarah joined a group of enthusiasts. I'm not sure the enthusiast is the right word, but you climbed Mount Toubkal in Morocco and raised funds for a school in Ethiopia. We're going to, you know, touch on everything else that goes along with your work. But Pikataya & Co. has partnered with the Richmond Foundation to support mental health initiatives in Malta, including funding over 1,000 free therapy sessions through Gift of Therapy program and implementing employee well-being measures like Healthy Minds Know survey and therapy leave. And I'm so delighted that you're at this table. Welcome, Sarah.
Thank you.
Well, obviously that last part of the description leads me on very nicely to Daniela Kalea-Bitar, who is a very treasured friend of the She Word and CEO of the Richmond Foundation, you've worked with the Richmond Foundation for over 25 years.
Yep.
Which is incredible. Now, last year, you said that there's been plenty of progress in terms of protecting employees' mental well-being, yet employers still need to do much, much more. And that's one of the things that we're going to be looking into today. Dan, thank you so much for being at the table. We've been working together for a long time. It's taken this long to get you here, so I'm delighted. Christabel Borge now, Christabel Camilleri, started out life in the public eye by hosting Maltese TV shows as a teen. But are you probably still best known for your Eurovision song in 2018? Yes, look at that face, you know it.
I mean, no regrets, just yes. I do a lot more things.
Absolutely. But you did speak out then about mental health issues. And this is actually not the first time that you and I have sat down. It's the first time in a very long time. Sure. But we've actually sat down in an interview before, and I'm really excited to have you here. But after, of course, Eurovision, you took your career forward. You are the CEO of the industrial company VNC, an investor in Malta's Shark Tank, which is where I last remember seeing you on TV. And then you went on to launch passion projects, brands, Health & Co., and more recently co-founded founder of the luxury brand 652. I am so delighted because so much of that has happened since we sat down before. I'm just going to stick with you. Hello, darling. Thank you for being at this table.
Thank you for having me.
I'm thrilled and delighted. Did I miss anything else out? You are, of course, a mom and a wife as well.
Yes, I think my most important role is that of a mom.
Ooh.
100%, hands down. It's obviously, like I was telling you before, I mean, today, maybe I didn't think about it that much, but she is like my pride and joy and my everything.
Oh, how lovely.
Now everything I do. Before, I mean, I used to think twice before doing something, but now everything I do, I think of her.
And of course, your co-founded brand is named after her. Yes. What's the connection there?
It's the time that she was born.
6:52.
6:52 a.m.
Oh, yeah. Wow, that's an early start.
Yeah.
Wow, that was a long night.
After 18 hours. Emergency section. So she came out bang at that time because of emergency section. She wouldn't have come out, I think, till like 6:52 the next day.
Probably. Oh, my word. And you're like, just get on with it. Listen, I'm really delighted because you not only have these passion brands, of course, you employ both men and women in very different sectors. And yeah. I'm really excited to be talking about that.
Sure.
Dan, have I missed anything out about you? Because you're quite elusive online. There's not a lot of information about you.
I'm not very present online.
You're not at all. No. It's very difficult. I had to dig quite deep to find out more about you. But what can you tell us that I've missed out on?
I'm a mum too. I have an 18-year-old son. I've been working in mental health, as you said, as 24, 25 years. I do not have social media because I went off social media very consciously for my own mental health.
Wow.
And I'm very happy that I did. Actually, my son turned 13, 14, and he started downloading apps like TikTok and Instagram. Mm. I became Spy Mom, and so there I do have an Instagram and a TikTok account, which I don't use and I don't post.
Just to check.
But that is my social media. And I did it very consciously because it really affected me. And I said, this isn't good for me. I mean, maybe not the same for everyone, but that's how it is for me.
You know, that's why I deleted Facebook because of that.
I love hearing that people have taken decisions. I myself don't have TikTok, and I have to say a massive shout out to Sasha of the She Word team, because she manages all the socials and she won't let me near anything because obviously I'd probably destroy it all. And Sarah, what did I miss out about you? You're just lovely. I'm so glad that you're at the table.
How sweet you are. No, I don't think anything. You've said it all. Leading on to what Christabel said, I think my main persona as being a mom. I'm glad that you mentioned that the Mount Tupkal. Mm. It was a real challenge for me and
but
something I really wanted to do. It was a time in my life where I was really feeling a bit low. Turning 50 was a really big deal for me. And I don't know, I just opened Facebook. Sorry, do I still have Facebook?
And I saw loving us on this show.
And I saw a post of one of the people who was going on this expedition. And I called up Keith Marshall, very old friend of mine. And he said, shall we? Like, is it true you're coming? And that was it. I didn't look back. It was
fantastic.
Really amazing. And it's something I wanted to do alone, just for me, without any sort of good friends or anyone from the family. It was just to be completely cut off, challenged.
Brilliant. Well, look, I want to kick off by saying, look, we don't really acknowledge, I don't think I have ever acknowledged really the impact of the workplace. I mean, a third of our lives are spent in a work environment. And that means that we probably hang out with people that we wouldn't necessarily be drawn to, and we might not necessarily like. And we're navigating spending 8 hours a day in an environment, perhaps even a job that we didn't really want to pursue, in a career that we didn't want to be in. All sorts of things happen. I mean, hopefully most people will be able to get into at least a career that they enjoy or a job that they enjoy, but not everybody. And I want to kick off with you, Dan. I want to ask you, how often do you see issues at the Richmond Foundation that relate to work? How many of your clients that come that want to talk to someone have issues relating? How big is this work-related mental health issue?
So we work directly with organizations. So we work with over 200 organizations, some big, some small, and we cover around 50,000 employees across the Maltese Islands when it comes to direct work, working with these organizations. Mm. But as well, we have a helpline where people call us and talk to us about whatever is troubling them at that point. And something that's been happening in the past few years post-COVID is that, I mean, Richmond Foundation and across with National Mental Health Services and even private practice have experienced quite a surge in and an influx of people demanding help. So just to give you an example, when before COVID, Richmond Foundation has existed for around 32 years and we've always taken calls from people who need help at that point in time because they're in some sort of emotional distress. And if you take any 10 rolling years, we used to get 400 to 600 callers a year. So this is pre-COVID. We're talking till 2019.
Okay, so not that long ago.
Not that long ago. In 2020, we experienced an increase. We received around 5,000 callers.
Wow.
In 2021, we received around 11,000. In 2022, around 12,000. In 2023, we received around 7,000. Now we're stuck at around 7,000. So if you compare it post-COVID numbers of people calling for help, or people just, I mean, there are a range of different reasons why people call. And in the past few years, especially in 2024 and 2023, and even this year, the major reason why people call us are relational issues. Sure. So not relationship issues, relational. So, and relationship with loved ones, with parents, with partners, but at work as well. So having relational problems within a structure of an organization as well. And we are, the same thing is reflected in the organizations that we work with. So that is the major reason, one of the main reasons why people call.
Not like work overload and these things.
No, relationship. So the relationship you have with either somebody that you work with or your manager, or that is the one of the major reasons why people are calling us.
That's incredible, isn't
it? So it's not mental stress or anything related.
It can cause mental health.
Yes, but is it the problem? Would it be because they're stressed because of work? Because the employer is sort of, there's too much going on, there's too many deadlines, or is it because of the way people are treating each other at the work?
It's mostly people with people. It's mostly that.
But then if you look at that, we're diving straight in. But if you look at that, when I sat down to think about this show, you can't really separate the issues. Because even if you're looking at a work overload, that means that there is a distribution issue, which means that maybe the person involved is not speaking up because they don't feel that they can speak up.
Or maybe the other person is acting up because they're too frustrated.
Yeah.
It's all about that.
You know what I mean? True. I'm surprised because of this, but when you're in a relationship with someone, you choose that person. When you're with your family, it's like you're given family, you know, it's blood, but you don't choose
absolutely
colleagues that you work with. So you either get along or you don't. But obviously then from an employer's perspective, you have to try and do your best to make sure that I mean, they have to work together. I mean,
but you know what, if I may jump in, Chris, it's true you don't choose who you work with, but you choose who you work for.
100%.
So, you know, as a company, then it's really important that, you know, you have all these values which you,
I, I'm going to beg to differ on that.
No, yes. Okay.
Because I know friends of mine who have been in work situations where they maybe are too afraid to leave. They don't know. You know, we can be very fearful of the unknown, and you can quite often get caught into a work environment where you don't feel that you can choose where you're going to go to next, or maybe the opportunities aren't available to you. So I don't know that everybody can, but I don't know that everybody feels empowered enough to choose the companies that they work for. And you know, you guys are obviously on point when it comes to being mindful of your employees' well-being and health, because you're sitting at this table. But not everybody has that same ethic.
We have a very low turnover of employees, but when it happens, if someone comes to tell me that they're leaving, first of all, sometimes I feel that it came out of nowhere, because they wouldn't have come and told me that there's a problem. If there's someone who I feel that there's a recurring problem and we didn't solve it, then I'd be expecting it. But someone that comes out of the blue and tells me, listen, I'm stopping or I'm moving on, I say, but were you happy here? Yes, I love working here, but I found a better opportunity. Within the different sectors, we have different reasons why people leave. For example, I'm going to mention my educational establishments. Not many people leave to go to another educational establishment. They leave to get a better position and a higher grade that can't be offered our schools, because we really try to empower them. We do a lot of team building events for them. We try to make sure that, like, even for example, if someone's going out on maternity, we go out for breakfast. This year we had like four after each other, so we had a breakfast every time, you know. And we try to meet outside of working hours, so that if someone has a problem within the working environment, they try to fix it outside of work, not within the four walls with children. At the office, obviously, and working in construction, it's a different story, you know.
You've kind of already answered my next question, because my next question was that the common causes, no, it's fantastic. The common causes of work stress include heavy workloads, tight deadlines, lack of control over work, poor relationships with colleagues or managers, unclear roles or expectations, and job insecurity. Now, we're very lucky in Malta that job insecurity is not something that we really have to deal with. I, in my career, have dealt with that. I've been through two recessions and it's absolutely awful. You know, it mentions workload here. And again, this still harks back to relational, because it talks about the relationship within the work environment. And we're heading into a Christmas season, so of course it's going to get really super busy, particularly if you're in retail. And I wanted to dive into this, and you kind of preempted this, but as business leaders or managers, for you as well, Sarah, how do you spot the employee or the colleague who isn't coping with this increased workload, who isn't coping with a relational...
Mistakes. You realize from mistakes.
Their mistakes.
Mistakes that can be fixed, always.
So you can see that someone's not doing well from the mistakes that they're making.
Mistakes, I mean...
Or just maybe unhappy, you know. I think it's... But you feel it. Or nervous, you know.
Could be, but I think I'm the nervous one in the office. So everyone tries nervous one. I don't shout and... But my job is so dynamic, so I jump from one thing to another. So most of my team tried to calm me down. Yesterday I was with one of the people that I work closest with. I was on the phone with her for an hour and a half. It was like a therapy session from 9:30 till 11 o'clock at night. And we were speaking about all the issues that I feel that could potentially be solved, but I have that kind of relationship with my colleagues, because I cannot call them
employees.
But
how many people do you have working within your groups?
I can't count.
Because you have that with your close colleagues, but then of course there are others.
You cannot have this kind of relationship with everyone, and absolutely, everyone has their own kind of manager, if you know what I mean.
Well, let me ask you, Sarah, how do you spot someone who is an employee or a colleague who's not doing okay, that they have an issue right now?
Again, as you were saying, I don't have the day-to-day contact with everybody. So what's important for us is that we train the leaders or the managers, if you want to call them, I prefer to call them leaders, to be able to spot somebody who's going through a troubled time. But I think it's you spot it about when it's somebody's, the behavior is off, you know. For example, if you know that person is very meticulous and they always come in smiling and they're generally in a good mood, and you know, for a lengthy period of time they're a bit quiet and reserved, then yes, then I think that's, there is a sign that there's something wrong.
Mm. It's true.
And if you can, you know, within HR, you know, ideally the HR person or the group of people who are managing the HR within an organization goes out and speaks to people. That's really important. Mm. It was one of the things I really wanted to do when I took on the role. I do, but I think I need to do, I could do it better. Let's put it that way.
And what do you do when you spot a person? What do you do when you spot a person who's not themselves? Because this happened to me with my assistant a few weeks ago. And I felt that something was off. Completely felt it. And I felt it because she normally does everything like, tum, tum, like to the dot, like
meticulously.
Very meticulously. But she seemed really unhappy and she was going through a personal issue. And immediately I got her into my office and I told her, listen, what's wrong? This is not you. I wasn't angry at her. I said, you can't speak to me. You know, you can always speak to me. And she started telling me, and she was going through a really rough time in her life. And I listen, one thing that I do, I have an open door policy. Mm-hmm. So whatever they require, I'm there to help in whatever they need, be it work, be it even personal issues. So I'm very close to the people at the office. We speak about our lives every day. Like, I think they are the people that I'm closest to.
You're with them all the time.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how many hours you said that we spend at work, but I mean, it's 90, like crazy.
90,000 work, you know?
Which is, I mean, we're illustrating here really good working practices. You mentioned having an open door policy. You've mentioned having leaders who are mindful of looking out for their staff, because I think that's where it comes from, an employer perspective. You've got to be able to spot the problems before they become too large. But from an employee side, and to switch it a little bit, organizational changes, inadequate resources or skills for the job, discrimination or harassment, and insufficient opportunities for growth, which is what you just mentioned before, also contribute to workplace stress. So I think most of us would recognize these issues. Looking at from an employee issue, how should we or can we as our employees go about dealing with stress and challenges at work that are impacting our performance? Because let's face it, if you're being harassed by a leader or a senior manager, your options are quite limited. What do you do as an employee?
I think both Sarah and Chris, I think you both mentioned something. Number one is you always notice changes in people, especially when something is going on, through behavior. And behavior can mean anything for anyone, but it's usually behavior which is out of sorts with the person. So if this person is usually cheerful, they might be quiet. If they're actually usually quiet, they might be irritable. You know, it could be whatever. So behavior is always a tell if somebody is going through something. And something else I think which is very important is if you as a leader, so it starts from the top, if you're open to talk about your own struggles and your own struggles with your mental health, this is where, I mean, then people will feel open
exactly.
To actually talk about it. And it has to start at the top. It has to, because if there's a closed culture and your organizational culture is closed and you cannot talk about your own mental health struggles, that and we all go through it. One in four of us, one in three of us actually now, at any one point in time. So today, a quarter of Malta is going through not a mental illness, but something, their mental health is suffering a little bit, okay? It's just creating that. And then as an employee, you feel better and you feel, okay, so if my boss can talk about it, then I can talk about it. I think that's one of the very important things that I think employers and employees need to kind of share and work together.
It's like you're mirroring yourself like onto them, you know? And it doesn't only happen with mental health issues, it's everything, even your work ethic.
Exactly.
You know, so, but you hit the nail on the head.
That's in an ideal situation. I'm going to be devil's advocate for a second because we're four women sitting at the table. We're talking about being empathic and sympathetic, and we're talking about leadership and leadership being involved, having an open door and being involving the staff and so on. I'm just thinking about your maybe in your industry where there are burly men on the floor. Sorry, chaps. And we are specifically talking about women, but there might be burly men on the floor that have different approaches. And this will impact women as well, because if a guy is going through an emotional or a challenge at home or in the workplace, I mean, let's not write that out. It might be that something's personal that's at home, but it might, and that might come into the workplace, but it might be something in the workplace. You know, men aren't so good at processing things as women are. I'm sorry, it's true. And we're not, men are not as
they're
good.
They're not as great as to
talk about it. Exactly. So the chances are that there could be somebody in the work environment who is being toxic unintentionally or intentionally. How do you deal with that? How do you approach that? Oh, there's a smile there.
You give them beer.
Oh, there you go. This is a marriage made in heaven between you two. I can see you guys going out with a contract.
No, I'm joking. But I mean, the construction industry is like a heavy industry in itself. So their job is tough. They need to go out every day in the sun. They have to work in with hot materials. So they're constantly stressed, but not stressed in a way, mentally stressed. I mean, their bodies are constantly going through this. So, I mean, but men don't talk about their feelings in general. I mean, I think only one or two of my employees have ever come to me and spoken to me about any issues that they have. But they do speak to other men. Okay, so there's an environment where they can talk to each other, and most of them are friends. So the fact that sometimes we work with a buddy system. So when someone
so they feel more comfortable.
So they feel more comfortable too. They feel more comfortable.
It works like that.
But
in the
funnily
army.
Enough, yeah. Okay, mm-hmm. I didn't know this.
In the army. Hmm? Okay, we're going to come back to that.
Funnily enough, the one leading them, I mean, besides obviously my family members, is a woman, and it's not me. Our architect is the most, if I can say it, badass woman. Oh, she's amazing. So, and she's approachable, but yet she tells them exactly what they need to do. And I love working with her, and I love hearing her speak because she's so knowledgeable about like this men's industry, if you can call it that. And I learn a lot from her every day as well, you know. I've been in the industry for a long time, but she's like badass and I love her.
Badass in charge of the men. What about for you, Sarah? Yeah, I mean, if there's an... let's say that there's an issue where... And this would hopefully not happen in the ideal workplace, but we know that nothing is perfect, but that somebody in the work environment is actually not being helpful. Maybe they're even harassing a member of staff. Maybe they're giving them a little bit of aggression. How do you handle that? How do you handle that as an employee? How do you handle that as an employer?
You mean how would I handle it as Sarah?
Yes, let's go with that.
Okay. Well, you just have to, you know, face it head on. Conversations are really sometimes difficult, and I feel really bad sometimes to say certain things, and I wouldn't say them wearing the Sarah hat, because I try and be as sort of kind as I possibly can to people, but then I have to wear the hat of a leader, of a CEO, and I have to do what's good for the company. So I just have to, I go face it head on. I'm very confrontational as a person.
You're badass.
Well, I like to, you know, say things how they are.
Grab the bull by its horns.
You know, I like to talk. I love to talk, you know. So I want to clear the air. I want to tackle a problem and get to the root of it, et cetera, et cetera. So, you know, if I have something that is really off within the organization, I want to tackle it. I don't want to let it fester. So yes, man, woman, I go head on.
Dan, we're talking to two ladies who are very empowered. They've got their employees in their heart, and they're caring about them and concerned about them. Is that where we find everywhere? Everything is that like that in every work environment?
Obviously not. I think different work environments, obviously you work in very different industries as well.
Yes.
But this, the baseline is that we're working with people. One thing that we can't, I think that is a myth, and it will always remain to me impossible, is the fact that you have one human being and you cannot separate life at home and life at work. So if something is happening to you at home, it is impossible for you to go home, to go to work, happy. And all of a sudden your switch is like, okay, work mode.
You can't.
You're human beings. You know, we're not
machines. Have, and the obviously
I was going to say, it's the other way around. Applies.
And it's and the opposite applies. So if you're having a very bad time at work, you cannot go home, and it cannot spill over into the work life spectrum. And even work-life balance. I mean, we talk it's quite a used term, work-life balance, but it means different things to different people.
Overused sometimes, I must say.
Yes, and sometimes, and I think sometimes what people don't understand is my work-life balance is not like yours or like yours,
exactly.
Or like yours. And sometimes it's more personal, and sometimes it's more work oriented. It shifts according to the time of year, it shifts according to the industry you work in. So when we set standards for people, sometimes it actually brings more anxiety to people that you have to, okay, you have to do 8 hours of work, and then you have to do 8 hours of sleep, and then you have to do, I mean,
and the meditation, and then the food.
So everything is, everyone is individual, everyone has different tempos.
There's no work-life balance. There is prioritizing
what's good for you, but
your priorities, that's it.
Which leads me on to this really pertinent point. How do we determine between what is a reasonable workload and the stress that you would expect from a workplace, and when someone is at risk of a mental health issue? Because if you've just said it's you overused, this whole work-life balance is overused.
I mean,
really?
I feel
so. How do
is.
We find the balance? Where do we find balance? Where do we find the central point between overusing that term and actually saying, okay, something is out of balance?
Look, I don't think there's any work, whatever sort of work you do, comes without stress. I mean, and stress is good for us. No, it keeps us motivated and makes us wake up in the morning, gives us energy, within reason. But as Daniela said, we make our work-life balance. You know, I'm the type of boss, leader, I don't like to use the word boss, that, you know, I don't mind. I mean, you know, there are obviously jobs which you have to come in early and leave at a certain time, more than coming early, because, you know, you're delivering goods on the road, so you have to be there at a certain time of day to load the truck, etc. But, you know, other areas within the organization, we don't clock, you know. I mean, you get the job done. How you get it done, when you get it done, if you want to work from home, if you want to work at the office, I'm quite flexible. But then don't come and tell me because I'm feeling stressed all the time. I mean, you have to have a bit of stress. So that's why I feel, you know, sometimes it's taken a bit too far, and people take advantage of an employer too. Mm. It, you know, and, you know, unfortunately in today's environment, there are many employee rights. I might sound terrible at this, but more than there are employer rights, you know? Mm. So
We mentioned about COVID and what the whole advent of COVID and the amount of people that had came forward and sought help through COVID. We know that COVID was a really, really tough time. But you also just mentioned this whole working at home sort of ethos. That didn't exist before COVID.
It certainly doesn't exist
on the construction site.
No, but
that would be difficult.
It exists in the office.
Yes.
But
for us, it exists.
But. I'm always curious about this. I, as somebody who's worked from my own office or from home for a very, very long time, I know that in actual fact, to be disciplined, to get up, to get dressed, to sit at your desk at 9 a.m., to work a full eight-hour day, which is what would be expected for you, from you in the office, that doesn't work for everyone. No. And that in itself can be its own mental health issues because you're isolated. So then how do you determine? It just makes things, to me, even a little bit more complicated, not in for better or for worse, but more complicated, because now you're looking at a situation where some work routines work for some individuals, they don't work for everybody. And then on top of this relational challenges that we've already got, we've got another layer, which is that not everybody is the same. So how do you determine what works for one person and brings out the best in them and what doesn't?
It's a pattern of what they decide for themselves, I think. I have people in my office who love to work from home, and they still get the work done, but I like them to come to the office so that I can see them, even if it's for 2 days a week. And there are some people who want to be at the office because they don't like being at home. But like Sarah said, and I second everything that she said, it's as long as you get the job done. I don't care where you do it from, you know what I mean? But there are some instances like caring for children.
Yes.
Or driving a truck. You can't not be present. But it's the job and the line of work that you chose, ultimately.
Mm-hmm. It's brought, working from home has brought something which I think employers haven't had to deal with much before, which is how much can you work from home? And how healthy is it not to have your teams meet? So not to be around the table and actually speak to each other physically. And I think it's something which is still being explored, even research. When you look at research on the workplace and what's happening now, you've had the advent of everyone going online because of COVID. And then you've had some industries who have actually told their employees, you have to come back to the office. Mm-hmm. And they've had a mass exodus of people who go to different organizations who let them have flexible working. I mean, we've learned a lot, I think, in COVID, that flexibility works. Especially with people with different circumstances in life and seeing everybody as an individual and saying, okay, so if you have the situation, yes, why not? You can be working from home more than twice or more than three times a week. But it still has brought on this push and pull of working from home and does it really work and does it not? But I think it, as you said, Chris, it has to be, if you're not performing, then...
No, of course. Then if you're not performing...
There is a problem. Mm.
As long as they get it done and the job that gets done well, okay? Not just getting a job done, because...
Yes. I think something as well that, Sarah, you were saying is that... So we have, I think, around four generations now in the workplace. So you have the boomers, you have Gen X, you have millennials, Gen Zs, which are at the workplace.
And the new one, I don't know what it's called.
And Gen Alpha. They're not in the workforce.
So your daughter's an Alpha.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
What year were you born?
I was born in 92.
So you're right, the Gen Z.
No, I'm not a Gen Z.
No, Gen Z is my
or a late millennial.
I think you're a Zennial.
This could be, yes.
Yes, because there is an
in-between.
I never labeled
myself.
Exactly. I don't know.
But and people view mental health
differently.
Very differently.
Oh.
Extremely differently. Yes. You have the younger generations who are very, very loose in talking about anxiety and depression.
That's social
especially
media. That's social media.
Which is good because, look, 24 years ago, people didn't talk about it. Thank God you actually had a song about it. So, you know, it's a taboo, stigmatized, which is great.
You didn't go to therapy when I don't know.
But so in the workplace, you have different people who view these things very differently. So you have Gen X's and before who kind of men especially will not mention their vulnerability and talk about depression, which hits everyone. Mm. I mean anyone actually. And then you have people who are on the other end of the spectrum who will talk about stress. And I'm stressed and I'm anxious and I'm at work, which is the opposite side, which is still, I think, in a way, kudos to them, because if they want the world to change and if they want our 40-hour work week which comes from days of, you know, to change. They're the ones who are going to have to change it. Mm-hmm. So if they're feeling it, it's
what's
up to them.
What's going to happen when that happens? I don't know what's going to happen when that happens.
I mean, kudos to them again.
It's interesting that you say that because even within the team of the She Word, we have three different generations. I'm Gen X. You must be the same. We're Gen X.
I'm Gen X.
We're the ones that are probably
are in next to.
You're Gen X, then.
You're
the young one.
No, I'm a millennial because I'm
an X because I'm at the end of Gen X, but Gen X.
You are. But you can see within the team the different work approach. I'm not going to say ethic. I actually believe that our ethic is the same, but the translation of the ethic and what that might look like and our boundaries are so different. I started off in London, working in London, working 70 hours a week because you had to prove yourself. I had a degree, I had a diploma, I had A levels, O levels, and still I was really lucky to get my job of £9,000 a year and worked really, really hard. I started as a junior all the way through. And I can tell you there were definitely some mental health issues along the way. I was also going through a failed marriage, a divorce and everything that came with that. But you didn't talk about it. You absolutely didn't talk about
it. Just plod on, eh?
Well, you know, I'm going to say no. I'm going to say alongside all of that, there were two recessions. And at times that destroyed me, absolutely destroyed me. But you didn't talk about it.
That's what I meant. You should have had to plod on.
Yes.
You know?
Plodding, I would say, was a little bit passive. I was sort of setting explosions off every left, right, and center and everything in between. But isn't that the case? Just because we're not talking about it doesn't mean to say it's not happening. Mm-hmm. And I think that's where we're sort of coming back to this being open. And so can I ask you, can you see, before we dive into the next area, which is about these relationships and nurturing positive relationships, can we see what the trends are in the workplace? Are we heading in a good direction? Is the fact that you have many, many more people coming to the Richmond Foundation, is that because there are many more issues? Or is that because people are more open about talking about it? Or is it a mix of both? And I'm going to come to you in a second because I can see Christabel in the corner shaking her head. But from your side?
It's a mix of both.
Okay.
We have younger people who talk about it more freely and so are reaching out more, which is very good because when you see that most mental health issues come out before the age of 25, so 75% of them come out before the age of 25, if you take care of yourself at that point, you're going to be talking about the workplace, much healthier and have a much healthier work environment. So that's very, very good. At the same time, yes, it seems to be that there are more issues. So it's a mixture of both and more complex issues. So people presenting with not just one, I have a problem at work and X, Y, and Z, but they will have more complex issues coming from past events in their lives and they have to deal with them which haven't been dealt with. So people are presenting them and working on them, which is a good thing.
Wow. Okay. I'm dying to know why you were shaking your head
because
adamantly.
I feel that the work ethic of this generation is not the same as...
Which generation?
Generation of those that are going into the workforce now.
Okay.
I don't know what generation.
What's it called?
Gen Z, no?
I think so.
Gen Z, yeah.
I happened to be present for an interview. I was there and I overheard one of my managers interviewing someone. And she arrived 20 minutes late. And the manager that was conducting the interview told her, I had to get the one that like arrived before you in because you arrived late. She said, I'm already not liking this. I don't want this job. And she walked out. And to me, if I wasn't there, I would have not believed her. But it happened, you know? And I feel that social media, because we're talking about work, but social media is at the epitome of it all. I feel that social media has made us think that we can achieve certain things that we're not able to. And social media is telling us that there are easier ways to get to the top or make money rather than working hard.
Do you think social media is also responsible for possibly an air of entitlement?
Oh, I'm going to take that as a yes.
I don't know why or how, but
sorry,
yes.
I just want to stay with...
I have to use social media because of my job and because obviously brand presence on social media is the most important thing because that's the only place that people can see your brand now.
Yes.
Nowadays, well, it's the biggest. But I feel that the negatives of it like outweigh the positives.
But this is proven. We know that social media is having a hugely detrimental impact on the mental health of the human race. We know that. We know that if you use it, it can be a tool, but most of us are being used by it. Whether it
and
be
write
that,
whatever you want on social media. For
yes,
example.
Absolutely. And too much screen time and everything that comes away from that. But what did you just say just there, Sarah? Because that was really, you popped in with a comment and I'm just like, I got to come back to this one. We're talking about entitlement.
I think so. But I just cannot understand. And I ask so many people that I meet the correlation between social media and our children of today being entitled. Why does social media make somebody entitled? Is it because they see everything and everything is just so easy to achieve?
And they see people on social media with an attitude.
Yeah. I'm entitled, definitely. I mean, the fact that you're that lady who came for an interview and said, I'm not liking this, I know.
I was shocked.
I know.
I was shocked.
Things that we
would
never do.
And I'm laughing now, but at the time, I said, am I hearing correctly?
But this would be somebody that wouldn't be invited for that role anyway, surely. That's not...
Of course. But, I mean, still... You don't say that to a potential employer.
Absolutely not. Listen, I want to come back to this whole relational issue because you mentioned before, right at the very beginning, Dan, that relational issues are behind a lot of the problems within the workplace. Now, we also talked about the fact we choose our friends, and rightly so, you said we have some sort of ease or comfort with our family, but I still stand by the age-old adage that family are like fish. They go off after 3 days. There's a limit of time that you can spend with your family before you need to remove yourself. You can't do that with the work environment. You've got to get up on a Monday morning, whether you like your employers and your fellow colleagues or not, and go to work. And then spend, probably, unless you work from home, but even if you work from home, you still got to engage with other colleagues, whether you be in management, whether you be someone on the shop floor, whether you be someone on a construction site, or whether you be in retail, you still have to engage with customers or with other employees or management. You don't get to choose that. So how on earth do we build positive relationships in the work environment? Both of you hinted at them, but I want to throw it onto the table because I think I don't want to mess around. I want to get down and dirty and put it right out there that sometimes you can work with people who stink, who don't have the same work ethic, who will let you carry the load. It's proven that men and women don't have the same work ethic. They may complete the same amount of work, but invariably statistics show that women are given 10% more work than their male counterparts. So it might be that you're in the work environment and you're carrying the weight for somebody else. We also know that women are incredibly bad at speaking out about what they believe, what's giving them a hard time, what they think they should be worth, what they think they should be worth financially, or whether they should have a raise, whether they should have a promotion. We know that. So getting down to the kind of down and dirty bit of it, actually, we can do all of the wonderful kind of team building exercises that we would like to do. But if you really don't like a colleague because they're shitting all over you, enough team building.
Find
is that
another
gonna
job.
Work? Is that the answer?
For me, if I were in that position, I would look for another job.
You, but Chris, not everybody.
I would look for another job. I said,
I think that from my situation, every issue that I've had between employees, I have tried to get in between and resolve it. But then there are some relationships that just don't work. So you separate, you separate them and you don't put them on the same tasks. I've done that.
Sometimes
they're characters,
just chemistry.
They just don't, they don't work well together. And I've done it. And I've moved offices for people so that they don't sit with the people that... But I try to accommodate everyone. Because if they're happy at their workplace, they ultimately...
The product goes up. It's not easy, I know.
It's really not easy. It's not easy at all.
I don't think I've ever faced in my time working at Pico Tire a case where we've discriminated because of a woman or a man giving workload. I don't feel, I hope to God that there isn't somebody who feels discriminated in that way, in the sense of workload. So I don't know. Not very long ago, I was talking to a friend and she was saying that her wife is unhappy working where she works. And I said, why doesn't she just leave? And she said, it's not as easy as you make it out to seem, But for me, it's so important to be happy at work.
Completely agree.
How can you wake up in the morning? And of course, everybody is worth something, you can't be treated badly. I'm not saying we're perfect, but you have to be treated fairly. That is something that was always taught to me by my dad, that we have to be fair, for them to respect us,
to respect them.
Well, that's a really beautiful scenario. Let me throw onto the table a case of a friend who was in a work environment. She worked fresh out of divorce. She had to work. There was no way that she couldn't work. And she was working in an environment where everybody spoke Maltese. And it's an international company, and therefore they were supposed to speak in English. She was the only person that didn't speak Maltese on the team. And they refused to speak English. Now you're going to say, okay, maybe she should learn to speak Maltese. She's in Malta. It was an international company. And everybody on the team spoke English. And she ended up being so isolated. Her mental health deteriorated so rapidly. But she couldn't afford to just leave. And of course, bringing the home component into that scenario, she'd just been going through divorce. Her self-confidence, her morale was destroyed. So what do we do about these relational issues? What do we do, Dan, to build relationships? And I'm going to come back to what you guys are saying, and we're going to go dive in deeper into that in a second. But what do we do in good company environments, both as employers and employees? How, if I don't get on with someone in the company, what can I do, as well as what these beautiful, amazing ladies are saying that they want to do?
So at Richmond, there are 150 employees. So work in an environment where we employ people too.
Right.
And one thing that we do to take care of our employees, obviously we take care of them because they are taking care of people as well. But we have, every team has something called group dynamic sessions. So it's from an external psychotherapist or psychologist, and you deal with the group dynamic. What does that mean? It means there will be one session where there's nothing happening and no one is saying anything. But there'll be a session where there are two people who are really at odds with each other and they need to deal with it with the rest of the team. It's not easy to do, and it has to be done by somebody who's a professional, because otherwise it's a disaster. Yes.
And external, not
external.
Within.
No, they can't be somebody who works with you. It doesn't make sense. It has to be somebody external because they're neutral. So this is literally something, and it's something that we've been doing for the past, I think, 30 years. And it works. It's not easy. And some employees, look at you like, do I have to go to group dynamic? And you're like, yes. And you have to, today you need to deal with this and this. And because it's useless you coming to tell me or your manager or whoever. You need to deal with it with the person. Ideally, they deal with it themselves together. But it's not always possible. As you said, sometimes the chemistry is just not.
Characters just don't.
Well, yes, and then they don't want to sort of, you know, they come and tell me something, you know, or like, for, and then they say, and because I am so confrontational, I say, okay, Mela, I'm going to get you and Hugh in a room and we're going to discuss it and we're going to trash it out and everything's going to be better. And like, freeze. No, yeah. No, you can't, you mustn't, you know, don't tell the other person I told you. I said, so why are you coming to tell me? You come to tell me so I help you solve it.
Push over.
I mean, how would the hell come to tell me for then, you know?
No, they can come and open up to me and even to you for sure.
One time.
But I always have to take action.
I mean, hate to see somebody miserable like that, you know? So this is a good idea. Well, I like that idea. I mean, we'll see.
We get many employers coming to us saying, so we have this situation and the situation is created because it impacts when you have two people who are at each other's throat. It impacts the rest of the environment. So how can we deal with it? And we just literally dive in when we send somebody to kind of see what's going on. And deal with it either through training, because team building sometimes is not the answer.
No, team building
can be a very good tool.
Team building is for us, we do it so that they can have fun.
It is a very good tool, but sometimes it's just not that. Sometimes you need to literally just deal with it, and you need to deal with it head on with somebody though that knows how to deal with it, because it can get out of hand.
For me, I'm not saying it's easier, but if I like the person and I love what they do and I think that they're great at their job, if they're unhappy in one place, I can happily move them to another company within the group. And I've done that as well. So for me, I've had these circumstances and I dealt with them. I grabbed the bull by its horns and, you know, and some have actually changed the place of work. And they're happier working with people. And sometimes I try to mix people from the different sectors. You know, I just don't stick to one company and they do their own thing. I try to do like events where they can all meet together and, you know, meet each other. And I feel that some of them are the best of friends, but then there are some that... Mm. There are some that don't get along, that used to not get along, and they trashed out themselves, and now they speak every day, and they work together, and you know, they have tasks together, and they really help each other, and that is one thing that I really love in my team, is that one helps the other, whatever the circumstances, you know, and I love that. And they tell me that they like that they work in a dynamic environment, that they
That's
don't
probably
work.
Because they see you. Obviously, they look up to you and they say, Maria Cristobal is really there for us. She helps us, you know, so.
Yeah, but I mean, I feel that everyone should be like that.
I know.
But that's me.
I want to dive into a couple of issues, mental health issues, that are not related necessarily to you as leaders. I've got three leaders sitting at the table, but that you would be aware of, and I'm interested to see how you would deal with them. Women experience much higher rates of burnout. Now, burnout is being spoken about quite frequently, and I'm mindful that perhaps not always appropriately, but exhaustion and psychological distress in the workplace doesn't compare to men due to factors like greater work-life conflict, disproportionate caregiving, responsibilities and systematic challenges such as underrepresentation in leadership and gender-based microaggressions. Now, all of these are very technical terms, but let's face it, okay? You ladies are all parents. You're all mums. We know that mums carry the more weight, on average, more weight at home. So you've got a career where women complete 10% on average more tasks than their male counterpart. And then we know that when you get home, the job isn't done. Women do, on average, carry more load at home. But I want to talk about burnout first, because this is on the rise. Statistically, this is an issue that is being seen more and more. And as our society changes, you know, maybe 70 years ago, women were not having careers. This is a 70-year-ago phenomenon that this started. So how do we recognize burnout in ourselves, in our colleagues, in our employees? And I'm going to even ask, what the heck is burnout? Because I wouldn't even know how to recognize that in me, because everyone has a day where they just don't want to get out of bed. What is burnout, and how do we recognize it in the people that is in our work environments?
I mean, people confuse burnout and exhaustion. And they're not the same thing. So being tired doesn't mean being burnt out. Being tired means being tired and being exhausted. So burnout is a range of circumstances and things that you feel which are out of the norm. So, for example, in my field, one big teller of burnout would be compassion fatigue, which means that your levels of empathy are not impaired, but compassion fatigue, where you kind of can't feel somebody tells you something which is quite serious, and your compassion, you're too tired to feel that compassion towards somebody. So that would be one of the, which everybody feels actually, but obviously in my field, it's one of the biggest telltale signs of like, take a break. Because you need to be able to help somebody. You need to be able to feel the empathy towards that person. And a couple of years ago, we actually held a conference about burnout, specifically about burnout. And there was a specific speaker who was from the States. I can't remember her name at the moment. And she said, when it comes to work, the biggest way that you can burn out your employee is to be in a meeting where they will have to implement what is being decided in the meeting and they're not at the table with you. So that was a big, big lesson.
Okay.
That if you need somebody, if somebody is going to be
handling
something, they need to be on board.
From the beginning.
Because if decisions are taken that they have to do and maybe they don't agree with, or maybe they think they can do it better, or maybe that is one of the biggest lessons that I learned during this conference.
Wow.
And I think it's quite important for employers to see that about the people that they work with and they employ.
Okay, that is really interesting. Light bulbs were just going off above our heads.
Think about this.
But it's true, isn't it? Because you have to also, if you're going to delegate responsibility, you've got to get buy-in for that responsibility as well, because it's going to be impacting on that individual. But from you guys, do you see burnout? This is not necessarily an issue that relates to your work environment. We're talking about the fact that women burn out more than men because their work doesn't finish at 5 p.m. Do you see this? How do you identify burnout?
I have experienced it myself. Badly.
What did it look like for you?
I'm not sure I want to
go there. But let me ask you differently.
I didn't want to live anymore.
Okay.
Okay, so for me, that was... pure burnout. Like, it was not exhaustion, because I'm exhausted most of the time. But...
And how did you know that that wasn't just depression? How did you know that that was related to what you were going through?
Because I had a lot of things going on at that moment in time. And I'm a problem solver. So if you give me a problem, I try to deal with it and give you solutions. Okay? I give myself solutions as well. And I really don't make a fuss out of things. I get it done, in the sense that if I need to do something, I get it done. If my psychologist and my psychotherapist have taught me that if it doesn't get done today, it can be done tomorrow. No big deal. There's no such thing as deadlines. I'm not joking. It's one thing that my psychologist taught me. And he also taught me to celebrate the small and little moments. And I never did that. Ever. I never celebrated anything. Now I try to... I never, for example, even if I would have accomplished something, I never would call my mom or call my dad or my husband because, you know, I did it, you know, something else next. Like, I'm that type of person. Mm-hmm. So it's from one thing to the other. When I was going through this really bad phase and period in my life, I had a lot of work, but it wasn't work because I love my job and I enjoy my job so much. But there were situations that I couldn't control. And when I feel that I lose control of certain things, that's when I say, listen, I'm falling into a trap. This is not the way I want to head. And that's what had happened to me. But thank God, it was only like a moment that it was before my daughter was born. So that's like... Even if I have nothing to live for, I have her to live for, if you know what I mean. Now, that's the way I think. Maybe it's not the right way to think, but...
But let me ask you, because you just talked very candidly, and thank you, about burnout, your experience of burnout. Do you think that you can identify that in the people around you? Could you... Would you, if you saw
I don't think I would. I would... And... I would realize that something's wrong, but not to that extent. A few weeks ago, we had an incident of one of our employees not turning up to work, and she switched off her phone for 3 days. And the person that leads her was crying so much. Like, she was calling me, I don't know where she is. I don't know if something happened to her. I said, let's calm down. And we started calling her family members one by one to see if she's okay. In the end, she was okay. She was just unwell and she had no phone because she had told us that she was unwell, but it's very unlike her to not turn up to work. But unless something like that happens, and if you see them turning up to work, they show up, they try their best. I think people can hide it very well. Like, I'm a person that's very open, but I can still hide when I'm feeling down. But because my mother taught me this, and because obviously I feel that it's the right thing to do, I talk about my feelings. And if I didn't speak about my feelings, then I don't know what, you know?
Sarah, just following on from what Chris has just said there, we mentioned before that we are Generation X. And this term burnout is relatively new. I don't recall hearing it 20 years ago. I recall being exhausted. I recall being at times almost as desperate as you've described there. But I wouldn't have ever thought of calling it burnout. But we know now that there is this phenomenon that is burnout. Do you know, would you know how to recognize one of your team?
No, I was listening to Christabel, but I think I would recognize depression more than burnout. What you said, how you would sort of describe burnout, that you would not be compassionate, is a very hard thing to realize in somebody.
Emotionless. You become like...
It's
numb to everything.
Kind of. In fact, there's a term called numbing. Like, exactly. So for example,
Become just this cold sort of person.
It doesn't mean cold, but like, so you ask someone, what did you do this weekend? I watched all of Stranger Things in one weekend.
Suddenly everybody's panicking. I watch Stranger Things.
But what I mean it has to be accompanied with something else. That, because we all binge watch something, especially if it's interesting to us.
Emily in Paris.
So, but Sarah's just raised a really interesting point, because if one of the signals for you and your employees at Richmond was that they had a compassionate fatigue and that signaled burnout, that in itself is going to have a massive impact on the workplace.
She said something very interesting, but she said she'd recognize depression.
Yeah.
And burnout can lead to depression.
But how do you differentiate the two?
That's what I want to know.
There isn't a formula, because even depression manifests differently in different people. You can have people who are high functioning, people who are depressed, and you would not notice that they have depression. Mm-hmm. You have people who won't get off the bed as well. So, and there are people who eat a lot. There are people who don't eat at all. So it manifests differently in many people.
But they are two different things, right, Dan? Burnout and depression are completely different.
Yes, yes, yes.
For me, it was a lot of episodes that led to it. When I went through a phase of depression, it was completely different. I was numb for a period of time, and there wasn't a specific reason for it. For me, burnout was because I had a lot of things happening at the same time that were all like.
But isn't this really important? Because for women, burnout is on the increase, significantly on the increase. We need to be able to recognize it, surely, because we need to be able to intercept that before it turns into depression. Because once you get into depression, that is a whole different ball game.
But maybe we should first teach how you recognize it in yourself. Like, for yourself.
It can come in way of feedback from people who are close to you and who tell you, you're so irritable at the moment. I mean, something small, which you maybe should trigger something in you to kind of say, okay, why have I been like this? But it's sort of, the formula is not everyone's different. But what people will identify is being tired constantly. So even though they're not the same thing, but it can be, you are just literally at a point where you need to rest. You need to take a break. You need to take care of yourself. But again, I'm going to stay away from saying it's this.
Because for me, it's taking a break for me is not an option. So,
but it's
I feel worse. I feel worse.
I'm not going to say if I go in the middle
on holiday.
But I still work on holiday. I mean, because it fuels me, you know, it gives me.
But coming back to what you were saying back there, Sarah, which is really interesting, you were talking about identifying a change of behavior, or even identifying small changes of behavior, seeing those small and being mindful enough to not be so involved in your own agenda that you can actually respond to that. And that's where leadership comes in. That's where good leadership should be able to say, okay, look, there's something's happening, something's going on here. We need to just dive into this and to investigate whether there's an issue there. But then, of course, that also puts a responsibility onto the employee. And just as we said at the table, how do you identify burnout? How do we identify that we're overworked, that we're overstressed, and that actually we should speak up? I mean, that puts the onus on the employee as well to be able to say, it's not me. I just can't manage right now. And I don't like the phrase can't cope. Because can't cope suggests that there is a deficiency in the person. Mm. Sometimes we can't manage because we're being overworked and the load is too much. And I think that's incredibly important to be mindful of, is that sometimes we ask too much of people, particularly if there's something else going on in the background. Like you just said, there was so much going on for you. So much going on. And this leads nicely onto my next point. We touched on this work-life balance. I'm too frightened to say anything right now about this. But most women will tell you that they lead the roles at home as well as taking on roles in the workplace. How is it possible that we're sitting here, women, leaders, women, how is it possible to create a more sympathetic environment for women, to be able to support women, to be able to empower women to be more efficient, more vocal, more leadership, more leaders, for crying out loud? How do we create this environment for women? We're women. I mean, surely that should be something that we want to do.
Sitting here in itself is already a good thing. No, I suppose whoever would be hearing us and, you know, feel something that's maybe would get them to become a better person, a better version of themselves.
You inspire one person, it's
enough,
because
then that person could inspire someone else.
100%.
Maybe having more safe spaces for women to have a to speak freely, to talk
there
about.
There are a few, huh? You do a lot as well, no?
Thank you.
You do a lot. It's true. It's yes, true. But yes, I mean, yes, yeah. This, like you, she was saying, you bring different women around the table and they're speaking about their feelings, they're speaking about their opinions. And I mean, we're women. We can do it all.
Can we?
Yeah.
Can we?
I feel that we can do it all. That's how I feel.
I feel like there's nothing holding. No,
there shouldn't be anything holding you back. Whether you're a man or a woman, you know. But yeah, I mean, again, although we've come a long way from 70 years ago, I still feel there's a little bit of this masculinity at the workplace where, you know.
Well, let me throw these statistics. Okay. You know, I like these statistics. We're 137 years away from men and women being equal in every wow. single aspect of life. And unfortunately, in the last 30 years, we are seeing a degradation of female empowerment, not a strength. We're seeing less women in politics. Whilst we're seeing more leadership roles being taken by women, the pay gap has not been equalized. We're seeing so many areas where women are working harder and being more empowered to take leadership, but the benefits of that are not being put in place. And one of those, of course, is you ladies are all parents. You ladies at some point or other, and I'm going to be very crass about this, you ladies gave birth to the equivalent of a bowling ball. And the postpartum experience of that is anything up to 18 months. We as women are expected to go back to work from 3 months onwards, which your brain doesn't even function the same way. I haven't experienced this, but I have seen it, that you get baby brain, that your body hasn't gone back to where it was before, and it will could take years to go back to where it is before. And yet, women are expected to go back and perform. Exactly. So this is my question. Quite frankly...
But that's why I told you that women can do it all.
Yes, they
can. I live in my own bubble, but that's what I think.
Should they do it all? Should they
do it all? If they want to, yes. Like, I relax when I prepare her lunch. And when I'm preparing my daughter, that's my relaxing time. I'm not joking. But I said, maybe I live in my own bubble.
But what about
want to do it all myself.
What about the single mother of three who's having a real hard struggle to be able to make ends meet?
I live in my own bubble.
Has to go to work, has to do these things.
And can have a shitty employer and still has to turn up every day.
Exactly. So how do we as women support other women in these roles?
I think it's important that we acknowledge that there are women who, as you said, are vulnerable themselves, who are women who are working, who are women who have children. And I mean, these are the clients that I work with on a daily basis. And I'm not talking about within the workforce. So it's the other side of Richmond Foundation, which works with people with severe mental illnesses. And we do have women who have a severe mental health problem, who have children. And in fact, that's why we opened a home called Dar Teresa, because we used to see the mom who has a mental health problem and used to go to hospital. And then, for example, the children would be taken. Oh, nobody can stay with the children, so the children would go into
foster care.
Yeah. Or else we'd see them in children's services, you know. So we actually have a place where we have the moment three women who are living with their children, and we're taking care of them and helping them kind of set up their own lives and live as independently as possible. And when it comes to them entering into the workforce, if there's nobody who's going to take care of the children, how are they going to work? How are they going to, I mean, you know, so it's a reality which is out, it's out there. And I think another point is sometimes we tend to be too, I don't know what the word, too harsh with ourselves. So
as women, you mean?
As women, as yes. So and we tend to judge ourselves constantly, like everything we say, everything we do, everything, how we parent, how we do anything really, and we it comes from the culture that we're brought up in. You know, like the perfettina, like when you need to be, especially us Gen X's, which were brought up in this. And one thing that I think I learned every single day is that there is no one formula to parent. There's no one formula to do anything in life. You need to do it at your own pace. You need to do it in the way that you know how to and learn if you need to. But stop judging yourself. It doesn't mean that because this person on Instagram did it like this with everything looking perfect that you need to do that. I think it's that we need to really open our eyes and just be realistic.
Which is for full circle back to where Christabel was talking about coming off social media, because we're coming back to this whole idea that social media actually is a tool that we use, but for so many of us, we are being used by social media, and that it actually is detrimental to our health in those regards. Coming back, I'm going to drive even further. I'm going to ask, I'm picking on you now, Sarah, because I'm going to point at you and pick on you. But as a woman in the workplace, a female CEO, a woman who is in the position where she can make choices and decisions for her team, who must have women on board as part of your team and probably as part of your leadership team as well, how do you build an environment of support for those women who have a hell of a lot to do beyond just what happens in the work environment? How do you support them to be able to get the best out of them specifically?
I think just to be a bit flexible and kind. I think what they see in me, which first of all, I'm the first female CEO at the office. So, yes. And it shows the way I speak to people, the mother hen comes out, the emotional.
I want to come and work for you and be mother hen. That's what I want. I want to be in there. I might just come in on a Friday and then I'll go over to Christabel and she can give me a therapy session, and then I'll go over to see Dan and she can buy me lunch. We're all sorted for me.
I think what they've, in fact, recently we've done a healthy mind survey, which the Richmond has done for us. And one of the things that came out was the fact that we are so flexible as a company in the times of an emergency. You know, kids, I don't know, there's always some emergency with kids, with younger kids as well, that they feel that due to that, they've built an even further loyalty towards the company. I think what women, if you had to ask them at the workplace, first of all, we're quite balanced. I'm very proud that we have 50-50. So our workforce is 50-50. I allow them to bring their kids to work because, I mean, you know, if they're sick, if there's no nanny, I don't have a nanny service, or I don't have a childcare center, but they come. They come and they sit quietly and they play and they eat and they watch a video. And sometimes it gets a bit rowdy, but I mean, you know, you get along with it. I mean,
yeah. I've taken my son to work for years. I mean, and
how do you expect? Otherwise, their children.
I'm really happy when the kids are over.
You know,
for me, what Sarah's saying,
it's normal.
Preaching to the preacher.
Because it used to happen to me. I used to have to stay home when my kids were sick and I couldn't send them to childcare, or, you know, if my nanny was sick or something. So, you know, something wouldn't have happened probably before me, but, you know, so it's...
I'm loving that. I'm loving that idea that you can actually take... I'm also slightly terrified about that, but you know, I'm seeing drawings all up the walls and scribble everywhere. But I do love the fact that there's compassion for women in the workplace. In just one second, I'm going to ask you, I know I started off by saying this show that we would have to do more than one show to even... I feel like we're just touching the top of the surface. We haven't even talked about how to deal with microaggressions or how to know when to move on and say enough is enough, which is what you said. You said, you know, if it's not working, leave, move on to something else. You know, we haven't even touched on that, but we have thrown so many thoughts out there and started the conversation. And I think this is really important because we as women and men need to be able to feel seen, to know that whatever you're going through in your work environment is not specific and only to you, that you are not on your own. And I love the fact that you guys have open doors and that you welcome in your teams and your employees to come and talk about the issues. I'm going to ask for closing thoughts, words of wisdom from you guys for the workplace as an employer to other employers, but also from the perspective of the employee. So if you had a closing word of wisdom, I'm going to start with you, Christabel. What would you say to other employers?
One thing only. Always show your appreciation towards them, because you wouldn't be able to get to where you are without your employees. You can't work alone. So for me, it's the showing like of appreciation. That's it.
Which applies for employees as well.
But as an employer, telling your employee, well done, you did a great job, you know? If they're having a bad day, that could potentially make their day.
Yeah.
I love that.
I love that. That also, I'm just going to say, that also gives you the level of trust to be able to say to an employee when they're not doing well. If you praise them, then they have the trust in you to be able to say, hey, look.
I say it as it is.
I'm not doing a good job.
I have to tell you, I won't fire you, but I have to tell you
what needs
to improve.
Amazing. Amazing words of wisdom. Sarah?
I think adding on, probably I would say compassionate. I think you need to be kind and honest. And even if you maybe can't be kind, because sometimes you can't be kind, you're being honest, which indirectly you're being kind. If you're caught in between a tough situation, I think you have to just say it as it is and be honest. And respect for us, you know, loads of respect. It will come back, you know. If you respect people, automatically they're going to respect you and treat you well. And it's just the whole circle will be very happy and productive.
Superb. Dan, last word from you, from Dan of Richmond Foundation. Words of wisdom from you, from an employer and employee point of view.
I think as an employer, I think one of the most important things to understand is that if you invest in your employee, and when I say invest, you invest in their mental health and in their physical health, obviously, but we're talking about specifically mental health, you will have... In general, you will just have a better workplace. So you'll have a better organizational culture. You'll have a more open organizational culture. And the fact that your employee knows that you are they are able to talk about their own mental health, and that you are being open yourself about, doesn't mean talk about your mental health or your issues or anything, but just be open yourself. The fact that you are open, I think, just gives people the space to be open too. And that brings an open culture, so an open way of relating to people's troubles. Because the truth is, we're always going to have people in trouble. If it's not me today, it's you. If it's not you, it's me. And that is very important for us to see and acknowledge and put our feet on the ground. And that's where we are.
Anything? I absolutely love that. But do you have any last words for employees as well, to empower employees?
To empower employees, I think ask.
Don't be afraid.
Don't be afraid to ask. And don't be afraid to actually go up to your HR manager or directly to your employer and ask and talk and relate. And if you need, at that point, help. Just, I think, talk. Just have an honest conversation. I think honesty and kindness is one of the things that really opens doors in general, human to human, you know? So I think that would be my...
Fantastic. I'm going to chin-chin. What a great conversation. I'm going to also ask, guys...
Chin-chin.
Can we sit down and do this again at some point? Because like I say, I think we've just started having a conversation about one of the most essential areas of our lives. Cheers to us.
Cheers. Thank you.
Thank you.